is where we'll begin. And Hebrews chapter 11 is a great chapter on faith. Yet, we live in a world of unbelief. When I was in high school, I only knew one atheist. He was my biology teacher, and other than being an atheist, he was actually a pretty good teacher. But he did not believe in God. Then I went to college, met quite a few more. In life now, met quite a few more. But in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1, it says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it men of old gained approval. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible." There we see that faith is not some blind leap in the dark. Rather, faith is rooted in evidence that produces conviction as to why we believe certain things. For example, I believe in the existence of China. Never been to China. But I believe it exists. Why? Because there's too much evidence for me to not believe that it exists. And in similar fashion, I've never seen the Father, Son, or Spirit. I never saw creation occur. I've never seen a single Bible miracle. All of those things. But I believe that all of them happen because there's too much evidence to not believe that. Yet in our world, there have been a lot of famous atheists who have lived. We have Karl Marx, for example. Well, we don't have Karl Marx. Karl Marx, founder of communism, was also famous for being an atheist. Andrew Carnegie, famous American industrialist, also famous for not believing in God. Then there was Sigmund Freud, who founded psychoanalysis, and he also did not believe in a creator. Then we have Clarence Darrow, if you have ever studied about the 1925 Scopes monkey trial. He's the one who defended John T. Scopes, as Scopes claimed to teach something about evolution, and Clarence Darrow defended. Now, by the way, I looked for a lot of pictures of Clarence Darrow when I was preparing this, and I found really young pictures of him and really old pictures of him, and he had that same bitter, unhappy scowl on him in all the pictures. That's what atheism will do for you, right there. But Clarence Darrow, and then Katharine Hepburn, Oscar-winning actress, atheist. Francis Crick, the co-unraveler of the DNA sequence, also an atheist. Warren Buffett, famous investor, very, very wealthy, atheist. Carl Sagan, known for billions and billions, and for the show Cosmos and the book Cosmos. Well, also a famous atheist. Ernest Hemingway, American author, an atheist. And Gloria Steinem, very much involved in the feminist movement, an atheist. Now, who gets all the positive press when it comes to atheism versus theism in the world in which we live? Who gets the positive press? Is it us? They look at us as backwards, we're ignorant, we're uneducated, we're superstitious. As Christians, that's how they view us. That we're taking a blind leap in the dark with no evidence at all. Well, I'm going to stand before you this morning and I'm going to say the reason why we should believe, and I don't back away from the language, the reason why we should believe is because of all the evidence that God has given us. Now, I'm really only going to give you a couple of pieces of evidence today. They're multifaceted, so it's going to take longer than 5 minutes. And the first of those that I will mention is the Bible itself. You know, the Bible is just a magnificent book. And when you look at the background of the Bible, some things about the Bible when it comes to the way it was written by about 40 different authors over about 1,500 years in time. Men of various educational levels. Men of different stations in life. Men living in various different empires and times in history in the world. Yet there is one clear, consistent message that runs throughout the Bible from beginning to end. God is, and God has spoken to us through His Son. But as you look at the Bible and you see some of the different facets of it, it is historically accurate. Back in the 1800s, skeptics said, you know what, you just can't trust the Bible. There are so many things in the Bible that we cannot verify outside the Bible. Take, for example, they said, the Hittites. The Hittites are people mentioned numerous times in the Old Testament, but we can't find a single shred of evidence for them in all the archaeological expeditions that we have done, not a single bit of evidence. And so the Hittites must be a mythological people that were invented by a bunch of superstitious shepherds around the campfire, and they wrote it in a book eventually, and it's called the Bible, and you just can't trust anything the Bible says. Archaeologists kept working in the Middle East, and with the continued turn of the spade, guess what they discovered? They discovered this people were not mythological. They really existed in that part of the world. And we know quite a bit about their culture and about who they were outside the Bible, not to mention all we learn about them in the Bible. Folks, that story I just told about the Hittites has been repeated over and over, with skeptics saying it didn't happen like the Bible said, and then sources of verification outside the Bible sometimes showing that, yes, it did. So it's historical accuracy. Also, it's scientific accuracy. Turn with me to the book of Job. Now, the Bible is not a science textbook. But when it discusses matters scientific, it is accurate. In Job chapter 26 and verse 10, it says, concerning God and His creation of the world, He has inscribed a circle on the surface of the waters at the boundary of light and darkness. In other words, in the words of Christopher Columbus in that old Bugs Bunny cartoon, the earth, she's not a flatter like the pancake, she's a rounder like in the basketball. Boy, that was supposed to be funny. Which didn't even, if you have to do that, you know it wasn't that funny. Which didn't even exist when Christopher Columbus, but anyway. The earth is spherical. Now, in Columbus' day, popular opinion was flat. No. One of the earliest books of the Old Testament ever penned says it's spherical. That's not the only place it says that, by the way, but we're not through. Come down, go up to verse 7. Verse 7 says, He stretches out the north over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. Now, ancient Greeks thought that the earth was on the back of the god Atlas being carried around, which, by the way, is why they call that book with maps in it the Atlas. Another ancient culture said that the earth was on the back of a giant catfish swimming through a cosmic sea. Rather than some superstitious nonsense as either of those, the Bible tells the scientific truth, and that is the earth is suspended. It is not on top of anything. And thus, another scientific fact revealed. Look at Leviticus 17. Leviticus 17, verse 11, says, For the life of the flesh is in the blood. And then he elaborates, And I have given it to you, that is the life blood, I have given it to you on the altar in their animal sacrifices to make atonement for your souls. Why? For it is the blood by reason of the life that makes atonement. Did you know the very reason God picked blood sacrifice as necessary to deal with human sin is because the life of the flesh is in the blood? In the giving of the blood, it is the giving of the life. The life of the animal is taken. But did you know this? Our first president, when he passed away, did not pass away because of the disease that he had. Rather, George Washington passed away because in those days, they thought blood was an unessential element. And if you drained enough of his blood, it would get rid of all of the impurities. And as a result, the disease would leave and he would live. But they drained too much and he died for lack of it. If they had known their Bibles well, the life of the flesh is in the blood, they would have known before it was medically discovered that it is true that life is in the blood. So the scientific accuracy of the Bible is something that helps us when it comes to this. Turn to Acts chapter 15. The Bible is also accurate when it comes to geography. Now, we have to remember that folks in Bible times did not discuss geography in exactly the same ways that we do. For example, if I were to mention a compass to you, north, south, east, west, is north up or down? It's up. That's how we talk about it. But when they talked about up and down, it wasn't about the points on the compass. For them, it was the topography of the land. Is it up? Is it rising? Is it down? Is it descending? And in Acts chapter 15, it's a very incidental thing that we come across in Acts 15. But notice in verse 2, as Paul and Barnabas and others are traveling to Jerusalem to discuss the Judaizers and what was going on. And when Paul and Barnabas had great discussion and debate with them, the brethren determined that Paul and Barnabas and some others of them should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders concerning this issue. Just incidentally, up to Jerusalem. Well, on the compass, they went south. Antioch is north of Jerusalem. But they weren't talking about north, south, east, west. They were talking about the topography and what happens as you approach Jerusalem. It goes up as you rise to the city that is there on that hill. But more importantly than any of those, we have the fulfilled prophecies of the Bible. Turn to Isaiah chapter 13. We'll spend some time in a couple of Old Testament prophets now. Isaiah chapter 13. And Isaiah wrote about a lot of nations, including the northern kingdom of Israel in the period of the divided kingdom, and the southern kingdom of Judah, again in the period of the divided kingdom. He prophesied about all of those and some other nations. But I want you to notice that one of the things he prophesied about was the Babylonian Empire. Now remember, when Isaiah wrote his book, the Babylonian Empire had not ascended to the level of empire status. They had not. He finished his writings around 690 BC. Babylon didn't become an empire until the early 600s BC. So, 80-something years before they ascended. But let's read. Notice in verse 1, the oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw. Then there's an apocalyptic language about the destruction of Babylon in 535, 536 BC. Come down to verse 17. Look at the other end of this. Behold, I am going to stir up the Medes against them. Okay, this gets even better. Not only was Babylon destroyed, but it was destroyed by the Medes in concert with the Persians, but that didn't happen again until 535, 536 BC. At the very latest, Isaiah wrote about 690. How much is 690 minus 536? That's right, it's a long time. It's a lot of years. That's the figure I was looking for right there. It's a long time. So he couldn't have known this. This had to come from God. It couldn't have come from a human guess. Then come on down to verse 19. And Babylon, the beauty of the kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. By the way, Babylon, when Isaiah wrote this, Babylon had not become the beauty of the kingdoms yet. That wouldn't happen for several more decades. So, in a backwards way, it describes the rise of Babylon. Then it describes the demise of Babylon and at whose hands they will fall. And all of that generations before it happened. Which brings me to this point. Do you know the difference between Bible prophecy and palm readers, horoscopes, psychics, and all of that today? Here's the difference. Okay, does anybody remember the Psychic Friends Network? All right, Psychic Friends Network had the spokesperson, Cleo. She had the island accent. Many of you remember that, okay? Dionne Warwick, who should have stuck to her music career, decided that she would also be a spokesperson for the Psychic Friends Network. And if you called their one whatever, probably 900 number, I can't remember. If you called their number, you could talk for X number of minutes for free. But if you wanted to get to the good stuff and really find out what's going to happen in your future, put that in quotation marks, really find out what's going to happen in your future, you had to give them your credit card number. This is before debit cards, probably. Give them your credit card number, and then you will start getting charged by the minute. Sounds like a great deal, doesn't it? Okay, do you know what happened to the Psychic Friends Network? They went bankrupt. I guess they didn't see that one coming. Now, there are palm readers and psychics in Sulphur Springs, Texas. I'm quite sure there are also in Amarillo. And every place I go, when I drive down the street and I see the big palm on the sign out in front and come and get a reading, here's what I observe every single time. Not a one of those are posted in front of a mansion. Not a one. Folks, if they could tell the future, they would not be living in a modest house with a homemade sign of a palm in front of it. If they could read the future, they wouldn't need that. They would be a lot better off financially. So what psychics do, Nostradamus, Psychic Friends Network, horoscope in the newspaper, whatever, they speak in very general terms. Some people say, oh, Nostradamus, he really got some of this stuff right. If you've ever read what they are talking about, it's like, and 12 will do something, or 9 will do something, or 2 somethings will fall, and it's like, that could mean anything. And you know how humans are. Okay, sometimes me and you. You know how humans are. If you really, 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 really want to believe something, is it really, 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 really hard to convince you? And if you really, really, really don't want to believe something, it's impossible to convince you. That's how we are, right? Psychics are preying on that. Here's what they want to hear, and they're experts at reading their audience. Bible prophecies are very specific and done so many years ahead of time, like in this case, for example, that it could not have been guessed. It has to be real. It has to be from God. Chapter 44 of Isaiah, when the Jews would finally go home from Babylonian captivity. And again, remember, he ends his book by 690. They don't come home from Babylonian captivity till the 530-somethings B.C. It's a long time before they come home. And yet, not only do they come home, notice in chapter 44 and verse 28 that it says, God says, it is I who says of Cyrus the Persian leader, it is I who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and he will perform all my desire. And he declares of Jerusalem that fell in 605, 606 at the hand of the Babylonians, declares that Jerusalem, she will be built. And the temple, which was destroyed by the Babylonians a long time before this, your foundation will be laid yet at least 154 years. At least, it might have been more, but it was at least 154 years before it happened. Not only does God say that Jerusalem will be rebuilt, it hadn't been destroyed when he wrote it, by the way, that it'll be rebuilt. He also names the man who will send them home so they can rebuild it. That's Bible prophecy. And we don't have time to talk about Daniel's prophecies, but Daniel talks about the same kind of thing. Daniel specifies that the Medo-Persian Empire, and he specifies them in Daniel chapter 8, that they'll be destroyed by the Greek Empire, and that in the apocalyptic language, the horn on the goat that will destroy the ram with the two horns of Media and Persia, that horn represents the significant king, well, of the Greek Empire, that's Alexander the Great, and it says that this notable horn will be broken and four will stand up in its place. And Daniel specifically says that there will be four kingdoms that come out of the one kingdom once that empire is divided. Well, historically, we know that's exactly what happened. And those, as you can see on the map, are Cassander, Lysimachus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy. Those had the four Greek kingdoms that came out of the divided Greek empire at the death of Alexander the Great. And in specific detail, before historically it occurred, these things are revealed plainly in Scripture. Please go home and read Daniel 8, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So why believe? Believe because of the Bible. The Bible is a book that could not have been written by human beings. It had to come from the divine source. It had to come from God. Turn to Romans 1. But the next thing I want to mention to you, the second piece of evidence that I'll talk to you about, is another strong reason to believe is because of scientific evidences that would give us conviction in the truth of the living God. Somebody says, wait a minute now, science, that is the stronghold of atheism and evolution. No, it's not. No, it's not. And you think about it. If God is truly the creator of all things, then won't there be things about the creation that comes from His hand that will point back to Him? Absolutely. So we have a member at home. He served as an elder for about 30 years in the congregation, and he is a retired dentist. His name's Bob Parker. And Bob has always had a hobby, and his primary hobby the last many years has been woodworking. And he makes furniture for his family. He makes clocks for graduates. He makes a lot of different things. But, you know, it kind of has his signature to it. When you see this creation, this beautiful creation, if you're at a graduation party and somebody opens it, it's like, oh, that's a Bob Parker. He created that for you. And so he does beautiful work. His fingerprints, so to speak, are all over it. You can see the designer in the design of what he has made. And if God created the universe, wouldn't you expect to see his fingerprints all over this? Certainly so. And the Bible declares that to be the case. Look at Romans chapter 1 and in verse 20 where it says, for since the creation of the world, His, and I love this statement, His invisible attributes, His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen. His invisible attributes clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. The creation gives such evidence of a divine creator that it leaves people without an excuse otherwise. So there was a famous atheist. In fact, he was one of the foremost people who would oppose people who believed. And he had a lot of debates. In fact, I have two or three of his printed debates in my office. His name was Anthony Flew. And Anthony Flew was a pretty famous philosopher and a famous atheist. And he debated people who believed in God to say, no, you guys are all wrong and here's why. But in the later years of his life, he changed his mind. You know what changed Anthony Flew's mind? The more we learned about DNA, the more he came to the conclusion, this can't be an accident. This is too much like computer programming. And if there's computer programming, that means there's somebody who programmed it. And the DNA code is of such a nature that it couldn't have happened accidentally. There has to be a designer behind this. And while he didn't believe in the God of the Bible, like you and I do, the true and the living God, nonetheless, he moved from complete atheist to believer in at least some kind of creator, because that's where the evidence led him. Let's talk about a couple of scientific evidences. The first of those is the second law of thermodynamics. Second law of thermodynamics, just in a nutshell, everything runs down. So I live in Texas too. I live in Sulphur Springs, Texas. I'm a Texan all my life. And naturally what that means is I drive a pickup. And so I went out to the parking lot one day of the fruit stand, because my wife said, on your way home, stop and get some zucchini. I said, I love fried zucchini, or any kind of zucchini. Absolutely. Pick up the zucchini, get back in my truck, in the ignition. I didn't even get a click. Folks, that's the second law of thermodynamics. So I called my buddy. He came and picked me up. I had the battery off by then. We got another battery. Back in business. Second law of thermodynamics. Another illustration. So you go to the grocery store and you buy a bunch of bananas. And that first one's just too green. For me, that second one's just about right. I can eat that third one. But that last one, you know what happens to that last one, don't you? You make, yes, thank you. You make banana bread. That's what you do. But that's the second law of thermodynamics. Everything runs down. Now think about this. The universe, what do they say about the universe? Doesn't matter if they're an evolutionary scientist or a scientist who believes in a divine creator. They're going to both tell you the very same thing about this. The universe is running down. That's the second law of thermodynamics. The universe continues to expand, and the energy that is in a usable format that is being utilized throughout the universe, that is dissipating, and the universe is running down. I look in the mirror, everything's running down. That's the nature of physical things. Now think about it. If everything physical runs down, can there be a purely physical reason or source that could have caused it to wind up in the first place? And the answer is no. The answer is no. And since there's no purely natural way that the universe could have wound up, that leaves us with one alternative, and that is a supernatural source. And folks, that's God. Or as one gospel preacher said, and you know, whatever you think about this, but as one gospel preacher said, you know, if there was a big bang, there had to be a big banger. And what do the evolutionary scientists say? They say, well, all the matter and energy in the universe condensed down to one spot about as big as a pencil lead or a pencil eraser, depending on who you talk to. And then it became unstable and it exploded. Come on, really? Are you sure about that? But you know what? In Genesis chapter 1, when God said, let there be, and boom, it was. That is a reasonable explanation. Theirs is not. Now, for years, that was my favorite and, to me, the most powerful evidence for God, or purely scientific evidence for God and for creation. But I've changed my mind. Now, the one that, to me, is the most powerful is probability. And it goes something like this. So let's place four white marbles in a box. And I'm going to draw out a marble. What is the probability I will draw out a white marble from the box if I draw one out? 100%. If I get a marble out, that baby's going to be white because all of them are. All right, well, let's take it a little bit further. I've got 100% chance, 4 out of 4. Let's take it a little bit further, and let's number these marbles. And now I'm going to draw out marble number 3. What is the probability that I will draw out marble number 3? 25%. I've got a 1 out of 4 chance. That's 25%. Okay, now already my chances are, they're diminishing. I mean, 25%, that's not impossible, but I don't feel real great about that I will get number three on the first try. But anyway, 25%. Okay, now let's make it harder. Now, what is the probability I can draw these out in order? 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, everybody hold on with me. Some of you might know this answer, but hold on with me here for just a minute now. What is the probability that we'll draw it out 1 through 4? I want somebody from junior high school, or college. If you're in math right now, or have been fairly recently, what did you learn in school? What do you use to figure that out?
Psychic Friends Network.
Yes. Kyle taking all my jokes. Thank you, Kyle. No, I didn't think of that one. That was great. You use factorials. Use factorials. Now, factorials, the formula for factorials is however many objects you have, and we have four. It looks like an exclamation point, but you're not real excited about the number four necessarily. It's just, this is pronounced four factorial. And the way you do it, you take however many objects you have, and we have four marbles, and you multiply 1 times 2 times 3 times 4. What's the answer? 24. So the answer is 24. So what are the chances of that occurring? You have only a 1 out of 24 chance of drawing those out, starting with number 1 and going through number 4. Only a 1 in 24 chance. Folks, that's a 4% chance. You like your odds of that? I don't either. That's about the odds of the Cowboys winning the Super Bowl this year. Or winning today. I hope their odds are better than that today. But anyway, don't like my odds. Now, okay, so if I were to tell you, all right, when services are over today, you're going to get in your car, and you have only a 4% chance of getting to your destination without dying in a car wreck today. Are you getting in the car and driving? If somehow I knew, and obviously I don't, but if somehow I knew you only had a 4% chance of getting from right here to your house without dying, if you get in the car today to drive there, are you going to get in your car and drive there? Nobody's answering. Are you? All right. Is there anybody who would take that chance? Anybody who's thinking straight going to take that chance? Nobody's going to take that chance. 4%? I don't like my odds. I'm not about to risk that. There's too much at stake for me to risk that. I can wait a while. If that's what it's going to take, I can wait. Guys, this is only four objects. And yet the probability of them happening to line up 1, 2, 3, 4 is not very high. Think about life. Think about everything that's been created. Evolutionist Richard Dawkins wrote in The Blind Watchmaker that the probability of a monkey on a 27-character keyboard typing this famous line from Shakespeare's Hamlet, methinks it is like a weasel, whatever that means. That sentence has 28 characters, and that is if you exclude the period and you exclude shift to get the capital M, and you include the spaces, 28 characters. You know what the probability of that happening? 1 over 27 to the 28th power. That's one chance out of 12,000 million, 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 million. You like your chances of that ever happening? What do we say in Texas? Y'all, that ain't never happening. Not going to happen. Figures like that don't help Mr. Dawkins and his evolutionary chance theory of things happening like we have them in the world today. 5 books in a bookshelf. Kyle, does any self-respecting preacher not like books? Amen, brother. That's right. Kyle likes books. I like books. We're self-respecting. And we respect each other. You know, if you have only 5 books and we use our factorials, there are 120 different sequences of only 5 books. In other words, if you just take them and close your eyes and toss them, the chances of them just happening to line up, even laying on the floor, in order is 0.008333333, bunch of threes chance. Don't like my chances. Now look at this factorial chart. We're only going to go through the number 12. So when you look at factorials, and when you have four objects, one out of 24 chance, don't like that one. But when you get down, only 12 objects, it's one out of almost half a billion chance that it could happen randomly. Evolutionists are basing their whole theory on this. So when you think about probability, even the simplest forms of life have millions of parts, and humans ourselves, we have 60 trillion cells. I feel like after being at the Ledbetter's house and after the Pope's fed me last night, I got more than 60 trillion cells. But anyway, humans only have 60 trillion cells. Imagine the complexity of numbers if you get factorials involved in that. This room can't hold the zeros. This world can't hold the zeros for 60 trillion factorial. What are the chances, if purely by chance, of those 60 trillion cells just managing to line up in the correct sequence? Oh, by the way, this is why Anthony Flew said, ooh, DNA code. That thing is too complex. It could not have happened randomly by chance. And he switched from being an atheist to believing there had to be some kind of divine source. Down syndrome. In Down syndrome, there is one small chromosomal change, and think about all the health issues that someone with Down syndrome has. One small chromosomal change. Yet the evolutionist wants to tell us that these DNA changes, these chromosomal changes, these gradual changes are in a positive direction. So let's say that we have something with 206 parts like your human skeleton, and we use our factorials. So 206 factorial is 10 to the 388th power. That is a 1 followed by 388 zeros. All right. Hope this impresses you. It took me a long time to get the zeros and the commas all in the right spot to get this many zeros involved. And it just about going to fill up this page, isn't it? And as they say on the commercial when they're trying to get you to buy something, but wait, there's more. And then if you call in time, you can even have this other extra thing. Finally, there we go. 206 objects. Do you like your chances? One out of that, of it happening just randomly by chance, accidentally? Of course not. You don't like your chances. So when you think about probability, this actually speaks to an intelligent designer, not to randomness and blind chance. The evolutionist says if there's enough time, anything could happen. Probability says, no, it can't. It can't. So what is the probability that a dictionary would be produced by an explosion in a print shop? The chances of a single living cell occurring accidentally in nature is worse than the chances of that happening. What about a 747 from an explosion in a metal shop? What about a rock city being produced by a volcanic eruption? I mean, there's some really cool things that happen in nature through explosions and things like that, no doubt. But a living cell, much less a living organism, everything in nature is more complex than all of those. Probability speaks to the incredible wisdom and power of God, because it takes both power and intelligence to do what chance cannot do. Now, my watch works. I must tell you, I left my battery charger at home, so it's not going to last very long. But my watch works, fully functioning. Let's say I were to take this watch apart, put all the parts of this watch in a paper bag, and shake the bag. How long would I have to shake the bag before I could pour from that bag, again, this fully functioning watch? How long? A lot longer than I got. What do we say in Texas? Ain't never going to happen. Although we have something that already functions, we have all the parts, and they're all in the same place, and infinite amount of power. No, you take intelligence out of it, you're not going to have design. You're not going to have what is creation. Charles Darwin himself said in his most famous work, Origin of Species, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. And to Mr. Darwin, I say, sir, your theory has broken down. So why believe? What did Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1 say? Evidence. And thank God and serve God for the evidence He has given us that He is God and that we are His special creations made in His image, that we may live for Him in time and live with Him throughout all eternity. Thank you for your kind attention.